If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play. Welcome to the Fallout Lorecast, the podcast that explores the boundaries of our knowledge about the world of Fallout.
Holy crap. Holy crap, everybody. I just finished watching the first two episodes of the Fallout TV show. It is the middle of the night. My family has gone to bed. I didn't record an episode today because I normally record on Wednesdays in the middle of the day. And I wanted to make sure that I could watch at least the first few episodes and give you my response to the show at least a few episodes in. And I wanted to get it out as soon as possible. So I'm recording this in the middle of the night. I'm talking very quietly because I don't want to wake anybody up. My wife just went to bed. This is amazing. This show is phenomenal. And I wouldn't go as far as to say it's absolutely perfect, but it is well beyond some of the things that I had hoped for and expected. I did multiple episodes going up to this episode with my predictions and talking with our patrons and all of that. And some of the things that I've predicted are showing up, which is fun. You know, I'm glad that some of those things showed up, but there's so much more going on in these episodes than I predicted at all. There's all sorts of little details. And the amount of care and attention to detail in this is well beyond my expectations were. They have clearly created these episodes, this show, with a respect for the material, for a love of the material, and they've worked in all sorts of fun things. And oh, by the way, This quick little episode I'm doing here, it'll probably be a fairly normal sized episode, but this initial response episode that I'm doing right here is going to spoil some things. So if you haven't seen the first two episodes yet, make sure you just wait, go at least watch the first episode. I'll try not to spoil anything from the second one. But my plan is to give you an initial response right now. And then for the next few weeks, I will be going through each episode one at a time and pulling apart the little details, some of my thoughts on the way that the plot played out or the characters or some of the little things in the background you may have missed. I'm going to try to cover every single little thing, answering questions about how some stuff works in the universe for those of you who haven't really played the games or maybe have played the games, but they're dropping things in the first two episodes that make me wonder, like, I'm starting to wonder if they've been hinting at other things going on in the games in ways that they've expanded on in the show. And now I'm starting to think back to certain things that happened in the games and going, wait a minute, was there more there? So I'll hold off on that stuff until we get through each of the individual looks at the episodes. But I just wanted to get out this first response for just this week in order to get something out there. And then I'm going to take some time. I'm going to watch through the whole series and I'm going to give you a full look at the first episode next week. And then going to continue digging in and getting you all the details I possibly can. So that's the plan. And I hope you'll be coming back for those as I get through those. But for now, let's talk about my initial response, my initial reaction and initial thoughts on the series so far. Okay, so first of all, let's cover things kind of in an order here. Let's talk about the tone of the show, the balance that they are striking between absolute terrifying levels of gore and human depravity combined with the clean, sparkly vault dwellers and the at the very, very beginning of the first episode where we see pre-war, like right before the bombs drop, with the way people were living. The dresses that the women are wearing are straight out of like the 1950s or 60s. The outfits the men are wearing, all of that stuff is absolutely spot on. And you would assume that that would be the case, but every little detail, even the style of the home that the people are in, the way the TVs look, the kinds of toys the kids are playing with, like all of those little details are spot on. And it creates this really interesting dynamic when you compare that and you contrast it to the wasteland and the bits that we get to see of people out in the wastes, the way that people are living out there. And we get all of these different views into the world. And I think that's one of the really smart things they did with this show is that they have three protagonists. We start off with the guy that eventually becomes the ghoul, and we see what was happening when the bombs fell. Then it moves on and we see Lucy and the situation with vault dwellers. So we have someone who is pre-bombs dropping, who has survived long enough to become a ghoul. We have a vault dweller, squeaky clean, pro, hey, we're going to save America. All the ignorance that comes with having lived in underground for generations. And then we have Maximus. And the third piece of this, we don't just have like the guy who has experienced the wasteland and watched it devolve, and the girl who comes from the vault who's squeaky clean and ignorant about everything. But we also have somebody like Maximus, who in the trailers and even the behind the scenes stuff that they did, little bits in the interviews and things like that, I was concerned that his character would be a little overshadowed by the other two, because you have Lucy and she's particularly interesting. We understand the whole vault thing, right? Like that automatically resonates with us as players, because how many times have we played the vault dweller going out into the waste, right? And then you have the ghoul, and of course this badass ghoul who understands the wastelands, who can take care of himself, right? Those two things really, really resonate, I think, with a lot of the fans of the series that have played the games. But then you have Maximus, and he doesn't start off as this badass brotherhood knight. He starts off as basically a recruit. Like, he is the lowest of the low. And it creates this third pillar with which we can view the world. We have the squeaky clean ignorance of the vault dwellers. We have the rugged acceptance of the wasteland and the terribleness and the way it just actually is in the ghoul. But you have this third thing going on with Maximus. Somebody who was naive and was rescued by this group who is just brutal. It's full of a lot of other people who are miserable, and they're looking for a reason to live their lives. They're looking for meaning. His story is all about meaning, at least as far as I can tell in the first two episodes. And he doesn't start as somebody who is on top of his game. The ghoul is on top of his game. Lucy is in the vault and on top of her game, as far as it comes for vault dwellers. She's, you know, she goes through some situations in the first episode, and it clearly looks like she's ready for the things that were going to be happening in the vault. But then you end up with Maximus, and he's somebody who is not particularly ready. He's miserable, and he's being mistreated. And we're seeing this kind of dark terribleness of the way, I guess, some of the chapters of the Brotherhood of Steel can work, some of the ways that they treat their recruits. And I'm sure some of that mirrors some people's experiences in the military and feeling like, you know, you're getting chewed out by your CO or whoever, and you have to scrub the toilets and that kind of thing, of course. But there's also just kind of this general disrespect that he has to suffer in it. And we get to see, at least in the first two episodes, and again, I don't want to spoil too much about it, but we get to see the beginnings of his journey towards finding meaning. And that sets the tone in a way that I find very compelling. Of course, we're interested in Lucy, and we want Lucy to find her dad, and we want to find out why her dad was taken particularly. And of course, we're going to be invested in the ghoul. We know that he came from a background where he was a single father, and so we're hoping that there's some humanity left in him. But when it comes to Maximus, we have a different purpose, or at least a different perspective as a viewer for him. We want him to find meaning. We want him to rise to the level of the kind of knight that he aspires to be. And not just somebody who is just surviving in the wasteland, somebody who actually has a purpose and somebody who wants to make the world better. And there's the line in the trailer about how, like, everyone wants to save the world, they just disagree on how, is kind of roughly what he says. And I think that that is a key part of his character arc. So the tone of the way that those three characters seem to be working in the series, and the way that that engages with us as the viewers, I think is paramount. I think there's something there that is really, really smart about the way they did that. And on top of that, we're now thrown into this world where we see the extremes, right? We see the way the world was before, and people were still kind of miserable. Like, they're hinting at that with the behind the scenes talk and the things that were going on. And then you have the tone change to the vault, and then you have the tone change out to the wasteland and how terrible the world is out there. And they're doing a really good job of just not just showing us sheer debauchery or something like that, but more of just sad apathy, the kinds of struggles that people are going through just to survive. And they don't have anything extra to give. Some of them don't even say hello when they walk by people. The world is just wearing everyone down. And that is done so well in the show. And I would say maybe even better than some of the games have portrayed that. There's a quality in some of the games where, yeah, people are living, they're dirty, they're living these mundane or terrible lives, or they're afraid of the terrible things that are out in the wasteland, or they're super uneducated and don't know how to use a water cleaning machine or whatever that was. But they, in the show, they're showing us a level of, I don't know, it feels even darker in some ways to the games. And maybe that's just, you know, me coming right off of the first two episodes and just being excited about having watched it. But the tone there is taken almost a step further. Let's talk about some of the things that show up in the show that are absolute callbacks to the games. So first of all, you have not just the scenery, like the vaults look amazing. The way the vault doors move, and they look extremely heavy. The power armor and the sound effects and the way that they designed the power armor in a way where it's actually believable to see somebody walk around in it. In the games, as Fallout 4 Fallout 4 and 76, they stretch the character's model out so that the shape of your character actually merges to the shape of the power armor, because the arms would be longer or the shoulders are broader, or that kind of thing. But the way they designed the power armor for the actors to wear, it actually fits on their bodies correctly and yet still looks correct for walking around in. Some of the action sequences get a little goofy. They're a little goofy on the way they have to cut some of the scenes and some of the fighting and things like that. But for the most part, it works. It works until they have to move the armor quickly, and then all of a sudden it looks a little cartoony. So that's not the best thing. I think they did a pretty good job, especially with like a TV budget on something like that. So let's talk about some of the other setting stuff. There's the Brotherhood barracks, which actually look really cool. There's this the way that they've designed these like bunkers out in the desert reminds me of some of the places that you come across in like New Vegas, for example. Even walking around in like the barracks where Maximus and his other recruits are all kind of like, they've got their bunks and all of that stuff. Even that is designed very similarly to what we see in the games. And that's pretty cool as well. I mentioned the vault, they did a really good job with the projection screen that makes it look like they're outside, even though they're not outside, and the different rooms. When one of the characters wanders into the other vault and sees the remains of what had happened when things went bad, that was done really well. There are definitely scenes in the games where you end up in a vault that has been ransacked and is empty, and you see the remains of like children's cribs and like the worn down wallpaper and the tables and the chairs and the glasses, and everything's kind of strewn about, and the desks are a mess, and there's garbage on the ground and dead bodies sitting places. All of that was done really, really well. The wasteland itself is actually really cool. They're showing a variety of different biomes, I guess you'd call them. There's like the beach area. There are these like swaths of what appear to be desert. There's also a more forested area that we get to see. And it makes me wonder if people coming to Fallout for the first time who haven't played the games are going to be wondering about, like, well, how come there's still trees and stuff out there? Because we get the intro, or at least the Lucy's intro, where they're talking about how, like, oh, it's so irradiated outside and all of that stuff. I have to wonder if people are going to be posing questions online about, like, well, if it was the end of the world and so irradiated, then why are there still trees? Or why are there still these, like, normal animals like goats? Things like that. Speaking of goats, the Brahmin, I think they did a really good job on the way the Brahmin looks. That was done really well. The weapons and the items, the objects in the world are really cool. The fact that, and again, spoilers, the fact that we get a junk jet and we get to watch somebody get murdered by it is phenomenal. I was hoping we would get to see some stuff like that. And absolutely, I'm sure there will be people who are super confused. They're like, did that guy just get a doll leg shot into his stomach? Like, what is going on? Yes, he did. Junk jets, you put anything in them and it turns it into a deadly weapon. So that's phenomenal. The guns that show up, so many of them are guns that show up in the games. Even pictures on the walls of like the kinds of weapons when they say things like, you know, like, you know, don't come in here with a weapon drawn or whatever. I don't remember what the actual label said on the door on the way in of some of these places, but that's a laser gun on those drawings. That part is really cool. Heck, even the use of bottle caps and the mentions of bottle caps, and they don't even explain it. They just treat it like this is normal. Like they treat the viewer, and this is something my wife pointed out, they treat the viewer as if you're intelligent, just like the games do at times when they use environmental storytelling to tell you what's going on. They do the exact same thing while Lucy's walking around in the first two episodes. Once she's out in the wastes, she comes across certain places, and beyond any of the characters that you meet there, as she's just looking at stuff, you can learn so much about the world by the way she's looking at everything. The poor family in their house that took a plan B by Vault-Tec, which was poisoning themselves. There's all these little details in the scenes. They're just so dense, which is part of why I want to take some time before I go through and really scrub through the whole first episode and kind of point out all the specific details for you. But there's just so much of that good stuff. So much of that good stuff. All right. I got to go thank our patrons. I'll be back in just a minute to go over some of the other details that just were so good in these first two episodes. So don't go anywhere.
Hello there, old chap. Good to see another of General Atomic's finest, still eager to serve.
All right, here we are in the middle of the show. I'll try to get through this as quick as I can. I have to shout out our newest patrons, including Dustfin and Joe W. Welcome to the Patreon. I'm so glad you signed up. This is like the whispery, most quiet whispery version of this mid-break I've ever done. Also, big shout out to Germinator. He is currently our only Sentry Bot level patron. Thank you for your support. And to all 79 of our current active paying patrons, welcome. That doesn't make sense. Thank you. Also, welcome to those of you who have been signing up just as free members. I'm glad that you're here. I should probably take advantage of that more and post some things on Patreon for everybody. So even if you don't want to sign up and actually contribute yet, you can sign up as a free member. So head over to patreon.com/falloutlorecast to go check out everything. Who knows? Maybe you'll like getting ad-free episodes or cool t-shirts and things like that, or also joining us on the Patreon chats where we can talk about the TV show, which is going to be so much fun. So go check that out. Also, if you'd like to help out in other ways, you can leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. This one came in from Space Pirate 1120 from the US, who writes, Space Pirate 1120 here. Just wanted to say that this show is the highlight of my week. Keep on fighting the good fight, robots. Thanks, Space Pirate. And then this one came in from Olo Polo Gaming in the US, who writes, I love this podcast. I was bored on a 3-hour road trip, so I looked to see if there were any Fallout podcasts, and I stumbled upon this heavenly creation and I fell in love. By the way, Robots is a great podcast host and his voice sounds great. Well, thanks so much, Olo Polo Gaming. I really do appreciate that. And to everyone else who has supported the show over the years and kept it going, thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here and be talking about Fallout as a TV show. So thanks for your support, for making that possible. Oh, and if you happen to have friends who are checking out the TV show the first time, even if they don't play the games, please recommend the show to them. I'm sure that they would get a kick out of learning all of the cool stories behind the show that they'll be enjoying this week. So thanks again, everybody. Let's move on with the rest of the show.
If you have any questions about Nuka World, I'd be delighted to answer them.
All right, so we're back. You can't do an episode like this where you talk about initial responses and all of that without mentioning the music. It clearly shows how much the showrunners get the Fallout games, that they're not just using some of these songs. They're using them in appropriate ways. They're using them to, highlight a scene in a interesting way where the song lyrics kind of match what's going on, or to contrast with the conflict or the terribleness of a scene with a really up and happy sounding old-timey song. They're using the music the way the games use the music, and that it just shows that they get it. And they've been using all of these tracks, and some of them I don't think were in the Fallout game. Some of them are. I know for sure some of them are. And one of the fun things about new Fallout games over the years is that you get a new soundtrack, and they will bring back some of the songs from the previous games, but then they'll expand it with other songs. And so you get to experience some of these other old songs, which kind of play into the world in these fun and interesting ways. And I feel like that we're getting that same thing here with the TV show and the way that they're using the music. And it's beautiful. It is absolutely 100% an appropriate use of that material in a way that does the series justice, I would say. Another thing I really want to mention, and this isn't a specific to Fallout thing, I will be going, of course, into more detail with that in the future episodes, but I just want to, not only the writers, I think the writers have done a good job. I think the people doing the sets, I think the people directing and most of those decisions have been really good. But one thing I've really enjoyed is the acting. I feel like, especially with Maximus's character and some of the really rough stuff that we see him go through, I turned to my wife as we were watching the scene where he is being interrogated, and the range of emotion that he goes through in that scene, the way that he is choosing his words because he doesn't want to be convicted of something that he didn't do, at least I don't think he did it, and he's going through all these different ranges of emotion. He's taking a moment to answer, he's tearing up, and it's not just it's a person in a stressful situation kind of performance. There's some real gravitas in the way that he's acting in that scene. I think Lucy also has done a wonderful job as well. She goes through these situations where I think she's in danger of the internet police saying things like, oh, she's a Mary Sue, all of that crap. She's not. She's a very interesting character who has been programmed by her upbringing to be a certain way. And she's standing up and doing the things that she believes are right, but she has no clue how dangerous the world is. And the way that she's dealing with those situations, I feel, comes across very authentic. I find her to be the kind of character who is appealing, like all three of the main characters are appealing in ways, but also there's like a depth, there's a hidden depth there. The way that she awkwardly handles conversations, and not just the way it's written, the way the lines are delivered are done in a like, oh my God, I totally feel that situation. I get it. I know how that feels. And Walton Goggins, I think, is also doing a great job. I've enjoyed him in other series as well. I would have been surprised if he didn't. And so far in the first two episodes, like he doesn't let us down. Now, in the first few episodes, I don't think we've seen the full range of his acting. I think the most of what we saw was during the early part, like the pre-war part, where he's still human, and his situation with the girl, and then dealing with, you know, the people at the party and that kind of thing, that came across very real. And then the version of him that we get when he's exhumed. Again, spoilers. And the way he handles that situation, and he's just kind of taking it all one step at a time. Or he has a line there after he deals with that situation. He says, you know, folks who can come from places like we do learn to just take it as it comes, or something like that. And I get that sense, at least in the first two episodes, especially when he deals with a tough situation that he runs into in the second episode. He just kind of rolls with it. And you get this feeling that, like, if he doesn't make it, he doesn't really care. Like, he's lived a long life and he's fine if he doesn't make it, but he kind of would rather stick around. But ultimately, it doesn't really matter that much yet. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'll get corrected in the next few episodes and I'll get more of a perspective on him. I'm sure there will be revealing more. Beyond the three main characters, the other characters as well, the Enclave scientist, who I wasn't sure if he was going to be an Enclave member in the trailers, but absolutely, he was a great pick. He was, of course, he's been in lots of different things. He was in Lost. He always plays this kind of like nerdy character, but the kinds of nerdy characters who are also a little bit more capable than you would assume, he's got that kind of quality to him. And the behind the scenes stuff with the Enclave, and then even hints where he seems to have more information and is more aware of the way the world is than you would assume that the remnants of the Enclave would be 219 years after the bombs dropped. Now, this is one of the things we talk about a lot on the show, the Enclave, the connections between the Enclave and Vault Tech and the American government and what information they have and how they're plugged into all of these things and have been kind of manipulating things behind the scenes, or at least were 200 years ago. But they are revealing things in the show that make me wonder where this is going. The scene with the at the Enclave base or research center or whatever it was, where it, clearly a super mutant is being wheeled away. There's more going on with the Enclave in the future of Fallout than I think we would have expected. I posted a video and an episode about the nature of the Enclave and how, I don't know, just go look it up. But I didn't expect some of this stuff. Like, for example, there's a scene where he says Lucy's last name and she's like, how did you know that? What that does is it implies that the Enclave of this time period still has access to live Vault-Tech data and that somehow all of those things are still connected. Now, we knew they were connected. I mean, I felt like we were pretty sure they were connected at some point. Maybe even post-bombs dropping. But they are still connected. And yeah, if you think about it, like MODIS in 76, still pretty plugged in with certain things, certain amounts of information. Fallout 3, you've got Eden, who may have been dropped, name dropped in the first two episodes. They mentioned Eden. The Brotherhood mentions Eden. And my initial thought was like Garden of Eden creation kit. Like they're looking for something like that. But if they mean John Henry Eden, then that's a very different thing. And again, I'm sure this will be answered as I watch through the next six episodes. But that's cool. So yeah, they're hinting already in the first two episodes that there's a lot more going on. And I'm sure some of you are probably yelling at your speakers right now, like, just watch the rest of the thing. I will. I need to take some more time to do that because it's the middle of the night and it's only a few hours since the show actually became available. So I haven't had time to watch them all yet. But that's where I'm at with it. I'm super jazzed, I guess you could say. Super jazzed about the show. So far, it's been fantastic. And I hope you're enjoying it as much as I am. I will be back next week with a really, really cool look at the first episode, going into all the nitty gritty details and all of that. I hope you enjoy the rest of the eight episodes and I'll see you next time. So stay safe out there. The Wasteland is a dangerous place. You don't belong here, Lucy. All right. See you next time. To plug into everything else we're doing, check out robotsradio.net. Reach out to me on Twitter at robots_radio. Check out the Robots Radio Rocket Club, where you can join me
and a bunch of our other creators creating your podcast, starting a new podcast, or helping your current podcast grow. There's more information about that on robotsradio.net as well. And you can always talk with us and the entire community, over 2,000 people on the Robots Radio Discord. Come join us. We'd love to chat with you. See you guys next time.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.